Good evening, Portland, and welcome to another Portland Sound Legacy Project episode on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Robert Davis, with my co-host, Michael LeClaire. Tonight, we begin a special evening of Portland music with a singer, songwriter, guitarist, educator, and longtime Pacific Northwest performer whose career crosses blues, jazz, soul, rock, funk, roots music, Ellen White. Welcome to this Portland Sound Legacy Project, Ellen.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here tonight. I'm very glad to be amongst the royalty here.
Oh, no. No royalty here, babe.
Oh, yeah.
We're just plain old folks here, but yeah. So, Ellen, music has been part of your life since childhood.
Yes.
And your music path eventually moved through bluegrass, gospel, rock, blues, and jazz. So, the question is, how did music first enter your life, and when did you realize it was going to become your life's work?
Good question. Well, my music came into my life when I was a very little girl, and I started off playing a Jamar piano, which is a tiny upright piano, and just banging around on the keys. And my mother had a huge big band collection. Tommy Dorsey, Glenn Miller,
yeah.
Count Basie, Duke Ellington.
You betcha.
So between those two, I was trying to find my place, even at three. And then one thing that was very prominent in my life was that I loved singing, and I sang about anything I saw, the sky, the birds, the water, the trees. Just as a little girl, just my imagination was just on fire.
Oh, my God, yes.
And it was fun, you know, until I went to school, and then everything changed.
Oh, no.
Yes, I went to Catholic school, and the nun said, "You can't sing the alphabet. You have to talk." And I said, "I want to sing it." And she said, "Ellen White, go sit in the back of the room with your back to the class."
Like, yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. Sit back of the class.
So anyway, and then when I was 6 years old, my father took me to see Lenny Herman and his big band. Now, Lenny was an accordion player, and the only time I ever saw an accordion was on, what was his name? Lawrence Welk, and Myron Florin and Joanne Castle.
Absolutely.
Were the two main headliners on the accordion.
And a one, and a two.
And a three. And so, so after I saw Lenny, my dad asked me, he goes, "What did you think of the music up there? And which instrument would you want to play?" Now, there was drums, there was bass, there were horns, you know, everything else. And I said, "I want that." And I pointed right to the accordion. So my dad found me accordion player or accordion teacher in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where I was living at the time.
I see.
And I was with her for 9 years and classically trained on the accordion. So I could really read music so well.
Oh, lucky you.
Up until I was 15 years old, when the accordion was not fashionable to bring to a hangout with your friends.
It doesn't work well with
rockers.
It doesn't
work at all. So I figured, oh gosh, how am I going to fit in now? So then I picked up a guitar, and I learned a few chords, and then people showed me different chords along the way.
Sure.
And my vocabulary in chords is okay. It's not great. But, you know, if I have to read a guitar chart, you know, I can figure out the chords.
Oh, absolutely.
About 20 hours of practice. But anyway, yeah, so that's kind of how it started for me. And then I was in with the accordion band, we played for all the fraternal organizations, the Moose Club, the Lions Club, the Elks Club. And we were in the Shriners Parade, the Orange Bowl Parade in Miami, Florida, which was widely televised. And we were on the back of a, what do you call this, long-haul trucks?
Flatbed.
Flatbed, thank you, that's the word I was thinking of. It was really kind of fun, you know, being up there playing like beer barrel polka 100 times as you're running around in a flatbed.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it was great.
Yeah. Michael?
Your influences include such as Ray Charles, Ella Fitzgerald, Joni Mitchell, and Bonnie Raitt.
Yes.
What did those very different artists teach you about finding your own voice?
Great question. So Joni Mitchell, when I first got introduced to her, I was 15 years old, and I was living in Connecticut at that time. And I thought, wow, listen to this woman's voice. And at the time, Blue had just gotten released. And I am here to tell you, certifiably, that that album saved my adolescent period. I was a wreck because I was an only, my parents died by the time I was 15. So I was more or less on my own, and I lived in a home with a friend of mine in Connecticut. I moved there, and he was a great guitar player, and he had a beautiful Guild D25 guitar. And so I decided I want a Guild D25 also, because the sound that came from that acoustic guitar was so delicious, and I had to have it in my life. So I saved my babysitting money and bought that guitar. So then the guitar became a magnet for friends. You know, you go somewhere, you bring the guitar, and sure, everybody's hanging out, and we're playing, and we're singing all these great songs. But Joni Mitchell had a huge influence on that part of my life. Ray Charles, I was introduced to him. My mom had a Ray Charles record, and I loved him. I loved his voice. I loved his piano. I just loved his spirit, the gospel and the country. And, you know, Terry Gross once interviewed him, and she asked him, well, what kind of an artist are you? He said, I'm a vocal stylist. I can do everything. And he could do everything.
Yeah,
he could. And play everything and sing everything. So that was a big deal for me. And Bonnie Raitt, of course, when I first heard her, I was so enamored with her slide guitar and how she sung and the background of her life coming into the public view with her talents. And I actually had a chance to meet her when Nick of Time was released, and it was after she got the Grammy Awards, a bunch of them.
Uh-huh.
And so she was at the Keller Auditorium, and Bob Anchetta from Kink at the time got me backstage passes. So my two daughters, who were 8 and 10, and myself, we went back to the green room after the show, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting, you know. And then in she comes with her entourage, and we're probably about 40 feet away from each other, and she's talking to people, and then she locks eyes with me. She gets up, comes over, and sits on the couch where I was sitting. So there's all these people going, what, you know. And we had this great small talk conversation because I knew she was busy and I didn't want to keep her. But she asked me about what I was doing with music, and I told her I was doing a couple of her songs, and I loved her. I loved her voice. I loved the music that she wrote, the
Absolutely.
Lyrics, all of that. So, yeah, I was hooked.
Eventually, your story became closely connected with Oregon and the Portland music community.
Mm-hmm.
When you arrived in the Pacific Northwest, what did you find in Portland's music scene that made you want to build your career here?
Wow. Well, I started doing solo work, and my first introduction to that was at Claudia's on Hawthorne.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to the jam there, and I brought my guitar, and I can't even remember what I sung, but all of a sudden, I caught the bug. That was it. I wanted to do more of that. So then the Dublin Pub hired me for several years to play, and then I got tired of being a soloist, so then I wanted to play with more people. So I ended up going down to Alberta Street before it was what it was today, and this is like 40 plus years ago, and a group called John Doe was playing there. And I love their music. Somebody had told me, you got to go see this band. You got to go see this band. So I go in and I listen, and I walk up to the leader of the band, and I said, hey, can I sit in and do a blues song with you guys? And he said, yeah, get on up here. So we did Ain't Nobody's Business. And they really liked my voice. And then they said, you want to do another one? I said, sure. Feeling All Right. So we did Feeling All Right. And then it just kind of went from there. And finally, the band broke up, and they reassigned themselves to doing something completely different, namely mostly Grateful Dead and classic rock music. It was just great. So then that's how I joined John Doe Band, and then we became Ellen and the Night Watchers. And so I was with them for 10 years, and then met Gary Mazur, and then I was with him for 10 years.
Yep.
Then I went on my own.
Wow. That's very interesting, complicated story. So we're going to take a break here. We're going to listen to a song. We'll be right back.
say I'm all alone, like so many times before. All I know, yeah, the blues walk through my door. All those weeks and years of crying through the pain, I've heard it, the thunder and the rain, and the tears keep falling. I can't take this anymore.
That is rocking for sure. The song title is The Blues Walk Through My Door. The album, Four Way Stop by Ellen. I forgot your last name.
White.
White. Oh, my. You know, that's what 72 will do to you, you
oh,
know.
Oh, boy, do I know it, that.
It'll steal your memory for sure.
So, Alan,
yeah.
Can you run down your discography for the radio audience?
You betcha.
And I hear you got something new coming out. When's that coming out?
I'm hoping by the end of the year, and it's going to be called The White Album.
Oh. Now, I wonder
you get
why.
The reference, yes. You get the reference, exactly. I didn't know what to name it. I looked at all the songs on the list that's going on the record, and I thought, no, not that. White Album. You know, so I had to call an attorney to make sure that it was okay to do that. I didn't want to, like, step on the Beatles' toes. But you know what? Paul and Ringo got it plenty of money.
Oh, did you spell it like
W-H-Y-T? W-H-Y-T.
Well,
yeah, of
they
course.
Couldn't
so they
go after you
right,
for that.
Right, exactly. But it's going to look, it's going to have that white look. The White Album is going to be white with my name embossed, the White Album, on the right hand.
Excellent.
Bottom corner there. So the name of the records we have, starting with 1996 or 95, is the first one we ever did was Different Point of Blue. So that was my first ever album released. And then 1998, Here and Gone was the next one. I want to say in 2001 or 2, it was Standing at the Sunrise, which we recorded down in Burbank with Dennis Walker, who became our producer. He played with Robert Cray for many, many years and garnered a bunch of Grammy Awards for him. And then what year was 2008? That's what Robert told me. 2008 is when we did Four Way Stop. And then the trio, which would be Jean-Pierre Garral, the late, great Gene Hauk, and myself, we recorded three records. The first one was Take One, The second one was Season of Peace. It was a holiday recording. And then the third one we did was called Inside Out. So it was a mix of each one of us singing a couple of songs and backing each other up with harmonies and instrumentation.
That sounds really good.
Thank you.
So we're going to pause for a little station ID. We'll be right back. You're listening to Community Supported KBOO Portland since 1968 at 90.7 FM, 104.3 FM Corvallis, 91.9 FM Hood River, and streaming online at kboo.fm/listen-now. As a listener-supported nonprofit, it's our members who keep us on the air with your ongoing donations. So please continue to support us by going to kboo.com/donate or text KBOO to 44321 to donate now.
Ellen, your 2008 album called Four Way Stop was named Best Regional Northwest Recording by the Cascade Blues Association. And you, Ellen White, and the Blues Reflex Blue were both recognized as Contemporary Blues Act. Now, I understand your husband wrote that tune?
Well, John was instrumental in writing a lot of the lyrics for that, for the records. And Gary Mazier wrote the music for all of the songs that we recorded, except for a couple of them. But you know, that we've been a songwriting team for 31 years. So Gary,
you might have it down by now.
Yeah, I think we got past going over that hill, if you will.
Do we have time to hear Four Way Stop?
In a minute, he said.
Well, tell us more about your songwriting with your husband.
Well, I usually come up with an idea. Like one night we were out for dinner. It's a great example of this. And we noticed that couples were not talking to each other while they were sitting there. They were either looking at past them. I don't think cell phones were around at that point. And just staring into space. And I thought, man, why don't they just sit at a table for one? Well, that became a song. And my dear friend Sue Orfield, who now lives in Wisconsin, played one of the most brilliant solos I have ever heard, and she is a great tenor saxophone player. And John wrote these lyrics, and I thought, this is perfect. This is just exactly what I was trying to convey. But those lyrics did not talk about that scene that inspired that song. So it was more about, you know, going through a situation and then redemption shows up and you're basically on your own again and you're doing just pretty good as a result of moving on.
So the engineer's a little behind, but here's the song, Four Way Stop, on the Four Way Stop album.
I'm crawling in traffic, the radio's on. Here's another tune of a love gone wrong. It's my life. Yeah, what's happened to me? I'm watching and waiting for such a long time, the tick of the clock, yeah, the rhythm and the rhyme. Where do we go when the light turns green? this four-way star. Yeah, you better be right. This is a left-hand turn. My tank's on empty. Yeah, that's not your concern. Where I go, hey, I'm out of here.
Ellen, we were talking while that was playing, and I got to give props to a dear friend of mine.
Yes.
Glenn Holster made those horn arrangements.
He sure did.
Can you tell us who's in the section?
It was Renata Caronto. It was Greg Garrett, Pete Peterson, and the three of those guys. I said Renato, yeah. So
was Glenn playing keyboards too, or did he just write the arrangement?
He wrote the arrangement.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So Jean-Pierre Garral played the keyboards.
One purpose of the Portland Sound Legacy Project radio show and podcast is to preserve the stories behind the music, not only the recordings, but the history itself. When future generations look back at Portland music history, what do you hope they understand about the community of the musicians like you who built this, Ellen?
I would like for the people coming up in the ranks of setting the pace for their future is that they really go out and listen to as much music as they can. And there are a lot of great bands out there. And of course, the younger people are doing things differently, I guess, is probably the best way to do it. And that's not a bad thing. It's that they're finding their own niche in this market. And I think jam sessions are a great idea because you get to meet people that way. That's how I met Sonny Hess, was going to her jam session.
Oh, absolutely.
And we became Jane Doe as a result of that fateful night. And we've had a lot of fun over the years. Her and I have been playing music together for about 31 years, in between some times where we weren't really working together because a lot of our other projects were coming into fruition as well. But we're still working as Jane Doe, and it's a lot of fun. But I think it's important to listen to not only live music, but go back in the archives and listen to the people who like are great jazz players. If that's your thing, it'd be Oscar Peterson, one of the greatest piano players. There's Bill Evans, who's a great pianist, and many others of that ilk. And, if you are an instrumentalist, and let's say you play bass, and look up all the great bass players from the 40s through the current times. I mean, there's so many different people. And just keep your eyes on the horizon. Don't give up. Just make sure that you're in lockstep with what you want to do, and keep moving forward. Yes, it can be very discouraging in time. Yes, the money is not that good, but if you love what you're doing, it's not going to matter. know, that's just the way it is.
So your many faceted career, tell us about your artist in residence in the Oregon school system.
Okay, so back in 2009, I was working at Karis Elementary, or excuse me, let me back up. My aerobics teacher asked me if I would like to do an artist in residency at Karis Elementary School in the Canby School District. And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. Do I need a PhD? Do I need a master's? I mean, what am I supposed to do? She goes, no. We invite creative people to come into the school, spend about 3 weeks there, whether they do pottery or dance or whatever. She said, we want you to come in and teach them how to sing the blues. I went, you're kidding. How many kids are we talking about here? About 380 kids.
Oh, my. Oh, like, just a few.
Oh, my gosh. So grades K through 6, and in those grades, there's more than one class. You know, there might be two classes or four classes, you know. And then, so I had to really buckle down and start going through blues history and making it age appropriate so that the kindergartners are not learning about breakups, you know, with somebody they love. So it's more about your friends coming to school, having fun, playing on the playground. So we did this. So I showed them the different artists that were blues artists that could play to that level. And they loved it. They just had a great time with that. So that's one example.
Well, Ellen, thank you for sharing your music and your history with us.
You bet.
And thank you much for the years you've given the Portland music community for helping carry this music forward.
Hope for many more years.
Stay with us, because coming up next is the Strange Tones performing live from KBOO Studio 1 for several of their great songs. And they moved to Studio 2 for our Portland Sound Legacy Project interview until 10 o'clock. I'm Robert Davis.
I'm Michael LeClaire, and stay tuned for the Strange Tones on KBOO.